I'm ready.
Go for it.
Okay. Welcome to the Sex, Intimacy, and Sobriety Workshop at West Hollywood Sober Pride. My name is Aaron, and I am an alcoholic. Please be mindful of your microphone and stay muted unless and until it's your turn to participate. You will find the controls located in the toolbar at the bottom of your screen. And if you need to leave the screen temporarily, we also ask that you stop your video until you return. Thank you. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions. Out of respect for the program and each of our members, please do not record any portion of our event or take any screenshots. We are grateful to have amateur audio with us all weekend long to record only the audio for all of our speakers and workshops. These recordings will be available to listen to for free on their website at amotoaudio.com. In keeping with the spirit of anonymity, you may wish to modify your name as it appears on the screen. You can also do that by clicking on the participants icon. There you will find, you will be able to find yourself and use the rename feature to use only the first letter of your last name or any name that you prefer. Now, please join me in a moment of silence followed by the serenity prayer. God, grant us the serenity to accept the things we cannot change, the courage to change the things we can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format for this workshop is that each of our three speakers will share for 15 minutes on sex, intimacy, and sobriety. And the speaker order was chosen at random. Please help me welcome our first speaker, Quinn C. of West Hollywood.
Hey there. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
I'm good? Okay, good, good, good. Just want to check. Hey, my name's Quinn. I'm an alcoholic. I want to thank my dear friend Philo for asking me to come and participate. I am in my car. I am not in my hometown of West Hollywood. I am in a parking lot in Richmond, California in the East Bay visiting family. My first time visiting my family since the stay-at-home orders, and it is just what the doctor ordered. However, I kind of thought that maybe I wouldn't want to just sort of bore them with like an AA talk on a Zoom just sitting in their presence. I certainly don't want to be talking about sex and intimacy in sobriety on a Zoom call in my family's presence. So I'm in this parking lot. I have good reception and I'm just grateful to do this. And so always grateful to participate in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not one of these people where people go like, oh, speaking's my least favorite thing to do in the program. It's not that I seek opportunities to speak or I feel that like there's some ego attachment to it, but I just don't mind it. And I also realize that in my own recovery, how extraordinarily important it's been to hear other people's stories. It's just, there's something just so profound. There's something profound about doing a four step. There's something very profound about doing a nine step amends. But there's also something very profound about sitting in a meeting and hearing somebody say something that you can identify with and just go, me too. That is what really kept me in these seats when I was new. And that's the thing that really keeps me coming back consistently is the identification and the storytelling we have here. So my sobriety date is March 30th, 1993. And to keep really on top with the topic, I'm going to say something, but I don't want it to sound like I'm leading up to what might be perceived as a logical conclusion. Sex is very inextricably combined with my drinking and my using of drugs. However, I'm going to get to a part where I'm going to tell you that's not a bad thing. It's just a thing, and it's just a thing of what I am. As a matter of fact, the first time I got officially drunk when I was 15 years old was also the time I had sex for the first time. I think also good to know, it was also the first day I ever ditched a class in my entire life. So it was like, that was sort of the framework for me, which was I knew that there were all these things I wanted to do. I didn't want to be a goody two-shoes, little candy-ass kid anymore. I wanted to get drunk as much as I could. I wanted to have sex as much as I could. And I wanted to avoid responsibility as much as I could. And I did that until the wheels fell off. But the thing about me is that I get further on in my, I get into my drinking and stuff like that. And, you know, I mean, I will tell you, like, I was just like a randy young man. I was just like, remember, like, when I was 18, I grew up in, you know, I grew up in Southern California, primarily Los Angeles area. When I was 18 and had my driver's license that I was 18, I did a whirlwind tour of every single bathhouse that was open back then in Los Angeles. I was like, oh, it's buffet time. You know what I mean? It was just like, it's just always been something that's like, you know, sort of like a free expression of sexuality as has been afforded for many, many years within the gay community. If one chooses to indulge in that kind of stuff, it's been something that I've always had a proclivity towards. I got sober for the first time when I was 20 years old in 1989, after 5 years of drinking. I hit it really hard, and then I went out. I wouldn't say I relapsed, because to me, relapsing tends to, hear people talk about relapsing, it tends to have this indicator that there's something kind of cyclical happening, going on. I will tell you the reason I didn't stay sober in 1989 when I was 20, 21 years old is because I quite simply didn't do the things that people in the program tell us to do. I did not do what the status quo tells us to do. So what happened for me was I had this knowledge, you know, it talks about in the big book about, you know, knowledge of our drinking is insufficient to stay sober. It has to be backed up with action. And so what happened for me was I went out with this knowledge I was an alcoholic, and I never drank again, but I thought I could use drugs instead. And I will tell you, it was not a good plan. And, I know people used to talk about when I was new, people used to talk about being on the marijuana maintenance program. I went on something that I refer to as the crystal meth maintenance program, which is not a very successful route for maintaining one's recovery. But then again, I kind of ran into some of this kind of like, you know, a lot of people have associations with methamphetamine and sexual activity. What it really is a lot of associations with methamphetamine and a lot of bad sexual and poorly executed sexual activity. But still, I was kind of drawn towards that, you know, and I think it's something that's worthy to examine. So I get sober finally in 93, and I had some misinterpretations of what people were saying around here. Completely unrelated to the specific topic here, but also too related to just sort of like application of these issues to the topic. I mean, I have this thing with words and semantics. I love them, but sometimes I take things, I can't get things the way people tell me. When I was new and people used to say about turning it over, I was thinking about a pancake. So I was like, okay, you have this problem. It's like, why am I flipping it over? And like people said, no, like you're turning it in. I was like, well, I wish they would have told me to turn it into my higher power rather than telling me to flip it over for my higher power. But anyway, I heard that people said that you shouldn't have sex in your first year. So I remained celibate. It wasn't really a hardship, but I remember like when I was new, I was a little more prone to sniveling than I am right now. I grew out of it mercifully. And I went to my sponsor at the time and I was like, hey, you want to have sex? And he said, well, go have some. So I was like, okay. And what happened for me was, I think for the next 6 months of my first year, all my attempts to go and have sexual contact were, I wouldn't say unpleasant, but decidedly awkward. And I realized back in retrospect what it was, it's like with everything in sobriety. It was my sexuality and expressions of it. It was learning to go back to work, learning to have relationships with my family. Everything was awkward. It was like, you know, it's like getting sober is almost like a reformatting of a hard drive. And at least for me. And it was like, I had to just, and the way that I learned how to deal with it was to just jump back in and and try and do things. You know what I mean? So it was like, there was a little judgment period. And so, you know, what I can speak to, and I think this is kind of a big, and this is, I can only speak for me on this. Maybe when I had maybe like 10 or years so of sobriety, I was kind of indulging in some sexual activity, not just regular sexual activity, but I was doing it a little bit more frequently than I thought. And I had a bit of sort of existential crisis over it. Like, am I doing too much? Is this something that's a pathology of me? And my sponsor, Don Ann, who's still my sponsor today, he made a suggestion to me. And he was like, I want you to go to 6 of those S meetings. And I want you to check out, Sexual Compulsives Anonymous, Sex and Love Anonymous. And I went. And actually, I'm going to be honest. I don't want to dissuade anyone from going if you feel like you want to check it out or if it's something that's a part of your sobriety. It drove me bonkers, and I did not relate to most anything that was said in those rooms, actually. And I was like, what's going on here? And by the time I hit the 5th meeting, I called Don up and said, do I have to go to the 6th? And he was like, no, ha, 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 ha. He's like, the whole reason he wanted me to go is because there's a sort of ethos in the mission of these groups, which is to come up with a plan. And the plan is something you do with yourself, with your sponsor, in concert with your higher power. So you take your relationship to sex and intimacy and all of that, and you formulate a plan. You figure out kind of what your baselines and your bottom lines are. And I think with that, it was very constructive for me to kind of like, not maybe do it formally, but to kind of see it that. But the truth is, that I'll take you back to the big book, you know? It talks about this, like, this is the part of our life that if God is all or nothing, then my sex life and my sexuality is part of that all as well, too. And this is something that I believe my higher power maybe not necessarily bestow on me as like, you're going to be gay, you know? But I do believe that it's a part of me, and it's something that's intrinsically there for me, and it's just something that is, you know? And I rather dig it. So I'm going to tell you something that I realized was that I still kind of liked in going to some of these like kind of places that some people find are, you know, maybe a little seedy and like less than desirable. Like I've always had an interest in what some people perceive as kind of like maybe the dark side of sexuality within the gay community. But I found kind of enjoyment in kind of different types of expressions of it. And what hit me with doing this work and doing the stuff with my sponsor and the steps is I just realized something, which is like, that's who I am. And I think for me, that also is an extension of my experience of the 6 and 7 steps. You know, I identify what are character defects and I become willing to let go of them. And then I give them to my higher power and then I let go. And I know a lot of people have a different lots of approaches to 6 and 7, but I really have a very concrete belief in that. I know some people say, well, I'm going to work on my character defects. Well, there was a big period of my time when I had jealousy was very, like, my reason why I was jealous all the time. I found out I cannot work on jealousy. Jealousy just is. It's a thought process. It's an emotion. But I realized that I was just moving through life and willing to get past it. Somehow things started to dissipate. One of them was I used to be jealous of people in romantic relationships. And that character defect went away when I started getting into some of them. I'm going to piggyback on something else, too. So in my sobriety, I've been in 2 relationships where I've actually resided with the person. And I'm going to be, like, completely honest. I don't want to sound like I'm bad-mouthing relationships, but the truth of the matter is, if I could probably turn back time and turn left instead of right, I probably would have. And what I also realized in my sobriety and knowing about myself, and this is something I really enjoy being single, and getting involved with somebody is like, I mean, I have the capacity to do it, but it's okay. And it's something about that too, is like, well, I was wondering, is this something that's wrong with me? Like, I can't seem to attach to these types of experiences well, and I don't seem to be navigating them well. And then I just got okay with the fact that, like, I'm perfectly okay being single and really being okay with that, despite the fact that there might be some other societal norms around it. But prior to that, my sponsor, Don, also gave me another one of these. This is not in the big book, but, like, I've heard people do this all the time. Probably when I had maybe about 15 years or so, he said, write down a list and write everything you want in a partner. I was like, okay, I can do that. And one thing that I realized, having some time under my belt and working the steps, and also too, like counseling other people that I've worked with similar issues as well too, through my sober experience, their list wasn't unreasonable. But then he did that thing where they say, okay, you got to look good because you have to be all of these things before you have that. Ha, 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 ha. And it's like, okay. What was interesting was I actually was everything on that list. And it wasn't that I was asking for too much, but I think the main reflection of that was sometimes hindsight's 20/20. And sometimes I'm not aware in the moment of the great benefits in my level of functioning in the world. Let's just leave it at that. My level of functioning in the world and my approach to the world because of the work I've done in Alcoholics Anonymous. And it sort of transformed me into basically the person that I would want, which then makes me okay to be with myself. And it's not, I'm telling you, the list I wrote was just like, had a job. I mean, it was stuff like that. You know what I mean? It was like, it wasn't lofty. It was very reasonable. And I realized I have a very unlofty, reasonable life myself. So I think to doing the steps, it's like I realized that like you can use whatever adjective you want. I'm a little loose, I'm a little sleazy, I'm a little promiscuous, you know what I mean? It's like that's kind of who I am. And once I got cool with that and realized it wasn't a character defect, it's actually just a part of my personality, and to stop beating myself up over it, I calmed down and settled in my skin. And I found other people in the program like me. And then the other thing about it was like, you know, getting into some relationships and then, you know, just really, like I said, it just really didn't feel like it was that, it really wasn't something that I really adhered to well. And just to be cool with that, with working, and trust me, in both these relationships, a million 10 steps in getting into my sponsor and getting feedback on them and getting sober experience. But I'll tell you, the sober experience from other of my fellows maybe wasn't as powerful as doing those 10 steps, because the whole thing is during these relationships, I can go back and honestly tell you that I don't have any direct amends to make to either of these gentlemen, because I did it through the process of the relationship. When things came up, I addressed it and I squarely confronted my part. But it's interesting, is my first sober relationship, poor guy, he actually came back and made amends to me 10 years after we broke up. And we sat down and he was like, well, you know, part of the thing I need to tell you is like, I needed some help and I probably needed to be on medication because I was pretty much paranoid the whole time we were together, which is kind of telling me like, okay, well, it kind of gives me a little peace of mind. But then I was like, how did I not see this? And why did, you know, love is blind, you know, but, and every now and then he still can't stay sober. And every now and then he'll send me a text message and say, I'm working the steps again. Are we cool? Yeah, we're cool. We're cool. Cause we did the work, and I hope and wish him to be well. But the truth of the matter, when it comes to my own perceptions of my sexuality, my sexual conduct, and my desire to be in a relationship at this point in time, which is all subject to be malleable and changeable, my working the program has made me okay with this person that I am in those regards, as well as the other regards that don't have anything to do with this part of my life. So that's all I got. Thank you, Philo, for inviting me, and I look forward to hearing everybody else.
Thank you, Quinn. And our next speaker is Christy S. of Sierra Madre. Thank you.
Hey, I'm Christy Schaefer. I'm an alcoholic. Thanks, Quinn, for starting us off so enthusiastically. My sobriety date is February 13th, 1990. And Philo, thanks for reaching out and asking me to speak. It's a great topic. And I could relate to Quinn as well as like my first sexual experience. I was in a blackout and on a baseball diamond with a young dude. Things change. I drank a lot, and during my drinking, part of my story is getting to a place where I was sleeping with old lesbians for money and a place to live and food sometimes. And what's funny about that is that I was 20 and they were probably like in their late 20s and early 30s. And like, I'm 52 now. So it's, I look back on that, I'm like, that was silly. But anyway, so my sexual experiences, when I was growing up, it were all about alcohol, and throughout until I got sober. And so when I got sober, sex was like, as a young queer, the only way that we could really figure out how to meet each other was in bars. And so when I was sober, it was a little bit strange. And I happened to get sober in Portland, Oregon. And there was a group of folks who were about my age that I got sober with. And so a lot of us like just slept together and did things. And what I found about my early sobriety and sex was that, and actually a large part of my sobriety, it was like these stages of growing as we can grow. If we stay sober, we work the steps and do some of the stuff. I'm the sometimes slowly variety. And so for me, it's been a very slow awakening, not only from the spiritual experience aspect, but also in terms of my sexuality. And not say I wasn't a slut or a player, as my wife likes to call it, because I was. I've slept with a lot of people. But that's exactly it. Like, I slept with a lot of people. I was very performative in terms of kinds of sex I had, how I was in relationship, and how sex was in relationship for me. And so what's been great about my evolution as a sexual person within the last 30 years of being sober, which is really weird, is really about trying to figure out who I am and like what Quinn says, like doing the stuff that we do in order to stay sober starts to translate in different ways. And so my ability to really basically like hug a friend and connect with another person emotionally was very much something I had to learn within Alcoholics Anonymous. And so, and I'll also say, because I have a former sponsee up on in there, the connection by being a sponsor, like forming intimacy and being vulnerable and having those moments as a sponsor and sponsee, helped me become available for different kinds of relationships. And as a result of being available for different kinds of relationships and growing spiritually, I got to be available with different kinds of sexual relationships. So like early in my sobriety, I do like participate in sex and perform sex and try to do whatever seemed interesting or kinky or weird. And as I've gotten old and progressed in this way, like my kink has evolved to like serial monogamy. And so like in serial monogamy for a while, trying out different partners and trying out different kinds of relationships, the thing that had been really interesting is like sex would start the relationship and then it would fall away. And there would be these aspects of myself that I'd work on within relationship. And I would evolve as a spiritual person and as a person, but like my sex relationship never really evolved much. And what has been most important to me through probably like the last decade is not only just this part of what seems interesting to me and what seems challenging for me, is to think about what do I really want and what am I really into. And it's not necessarily about the type of person I want to be with, or although that plays a factor, but it really is a matter of the kind of connection that I want to have with my sexual partner. And what I found in the, up until the being married now, my current partner, my rest of my life partner, is that I couldn't really like figure out my role within sex as I became more available for it, essentially. And I couldn't even really identify that I was more available for sex than and more about available for different kinds of sex. And so what kind of pieced together is like my ability to connect with other people via sponsorship and relationships and friends and building intimate friends over a period of time and trying out different sexual relationships is like having that converge where I can now participate in relationship and have intimacy and vulnerability and connect sexually. And it's actually like the most best thing ever. And I think for years and years, I thought that that's what was happening for me. But what I've learned is that my connection during those years was about, I don't know how to characterize it best, but it was really about being there for the moment, but not being there for the moments around it, which are actually the most important moments. So my ability to be present in my body before, during, and after sex is like the biggest change for me. And it's like, holy shit. And so I learned all kinds of great things about myself as a result of that. Also because I have a pretty rad partner, is that the way that I used to perform sex and be into sex and my sexual identity has changed and evolved. And I get to have more curiosity about my sex life than I ever have before. Cause I kind of was like in this, like, this is who I am. This is how I'm going to be. And this is my sexual identity and I'm going to perform that. And I no longer have to do that. I get to be curious and have rad conversations and hard conversations, honestly, with the spirit of trust to talk about like what feels good and what feels the most connecting and the most vulnerable. And that sounds like super creepy and weird to say, but it's the most exciting aspect of my sex life as it is today. So there's that. And I think one of the things too that I want to say is that like the literature talks about the different types of the hot pepper diet or whatever the phrase is, right? It's like, it's great. It's like we get to try whatever we want. And some folks are really more conservative and some folks aren't. And we get to try out all that we want, provided that we stay sober. And I think that's one of the most important things throughout my time of being sober is that I just stayed sober. I did the stuff probably at the bare minimum in terms of working the steps and showing up to meetings and showing up for sponsees. And as a result, like my evolution as a human, as a spiritual being, as a sexual being is like super different. And I wouldn't have hoped for that when I first got sober. When I first got sober, it was really cool just to like meet other young queers that were sober and see if I could get in their pants. And it's like I have really different motivations than I used to anymore. And it's about building trust and vulnerability with whomever it is, in friend relationships or work relationships, and certainly in my personal sexual relationships, like upping the ante on a week by week basis for how I can show up for that in the most vulnerable, freaky, scary kind of ways possible, just to see what I'm capable of and what feels good and what moves our relationship forward. And I feel really stoked about that. It seems like the hugest gift, along with just being alive and sober and just seeing what life has to offer. I hope that some of that made sense and some of it might not. I go sometimes to a different fellowship meeting with my partner, and there's an emphasis on kink in that meeting. And what's so great is it's like us and a lot of fags, and that we talk about intimacy and we talk about vulnerability and connection and how different kinds of kink can bring that to the foreground in a safe, sane, consensual, sober manner. And And it's just so rad to be a part of a group at times where, you know, it's like the, when I first got sober, actually before I got sober in the late 80s in Portland, Oregon, like the, a lot of the people I hung out with were like these like crusty old leather daggers. They probably were younger than me now, but, and they're just like so intimidating. And so the posturing around the leather community then, and since then, right, was always this thing that, kind of gone in and out of from my, in my own way, and was part of that performativeness. And so to be a part of a group that is just like so awesomely about vulnerability and having kink just be a part of the way of connecting to other folks is like, has been really a fantastic part of my recent journey as well. And so I think it can look all different ways. And I think for me, intimacy is about just the connection part, and however I can figure out to get in my body and have my eyeballs be alive and have my partner see that I'm alive with my eyeballs. It's not that easy for me. I'm not someone that's just sparkly. I'm not. I am somebody who's a pretty intense alcoholic, and probably got some other stuff going on, and sometimes it makes it really hard for me to be available. And so like that part of me that has figured that out as a result of being sober. And then I get to like work really hard to be available for like the most awesome stuff in my life. So I don't think I want to ramble much more than that. And yeah, that's my take on sex.
Thank you, Christy, for that share, beautiful share. And our closing speaker is Billy B. of San Francisco.
Hi, my name is Billy and I'm an alcoholic. And what that means is when I start, I can't stop. Hey. Let's see, sex. Well, I'm all for it. I've always been all for it, though everybody gave it for someone you love. That was my upbringing about sex, which I never believed anyway, because anything that feels that good can be wrong. Now, there's been a lot of change-ups since I got sober. When I got sober, I had to watch Cops in America's Most Wanted religiously every Saturday night to see if my old boyfriends had new tattoos. The first thing they told me when I got here was that my picker was busted. And it's true. I would pick things and people and places that would make me terribly unhappy. I had absolutely no idea what was safe for me, what was good for me, who was good for me, until I did my first sexual inventory. And then I realized a lot of the stuff that was going on was old information. I was sober for about 7-8 years, and I went 18 months without sex. I didn't plan it. It just seemed like the thing to do at the time. And I thought, well, okay, I'll go with it. And I did. And what happened was when I came out of, and I came out of it with a bang, you know, when it was over, it was over. I realized I, for the first time in my life, I had the ability to negotiate sex. And that is essentially to talk before I left. I could tell you what I wanted. I could ask you what you wanted. And if you couldn't tell me what you wanted, I wasn't going to bed with you. It was just that simple, you know? And because if you don't do that, then the partner that you're with, if you don't know what they want, what they haven't told you, you know, because they may expect you to be a mind reader, they're going to be very pissed off at you. And here you've done all this lovely work. And the best that they can do is be mad at you. So that's just a total waste of time. Since that time, I've negotiated sex, sometimes very well, sometimes very poorly. I'm not going to tell you that everybody that I've loved as a sexual partner between then and now, because I've got 37 years now, and that it's all worked out. It hasn't. I haven't always picked well, even so. And it's always when... Well, let's put it this way. They've done studies that, you know, the inhibition part of the brain is actually useless during sexual arousal. You know, I have gone for the greasy pig, so to speak, from time to time. When I knew I shouldn't have, but it was a question of need, rather than the question that they ask in the inventory, which is this selfish or not? If it's selfish, I'm in trouble. If I'm doing 68, you know, you do me and I'll owe you one, I'm likely to be on the wrong track. Absolutely. And now I'm 79 years old and I haven't had sex in 2 years. I think I'm doing another inventory. I don't think I'm done. I mean, I asked an 80-year-old woman who was picking up a 40-year chip years ago, when does sex stop being troublesome? Of course, she was sporting a 65-year-old stud. And she looked at me and she said, never. You know, so what's the difference? And the difference is, am I being selfish or not? The difference is how much energy am I willing to put into my partner's pleasure? If I'm willing to do that, it's probably going to be okay. I'm probably not going to, when they walk out the door, go, why the hell did I do that? You know, it's one of the worst feelings in the world. I call it, it leaves you with that dark brown taste, you know, and, I don't have a lot of that. Of course, I'm not having sex, but thank God it's not because I haven't been asked. I'm just not interested. Intimacy, I have it everywhere I go. You know, one of the nice things about the terrible times that we're living in, people have been showing up my door with bags of groceries unasked. They just can figure, oh, it's time to make a delivery to mom, you know? And, that kind of care and consideration you can't buy. You know, it only comes when your relationship with your fellows is good. Now we talk about the relationship. That's what we hear when we hear the word relationship. I have relationships all over town. There's lots of people that are glad to see me, which is very different from when it was at the end of my drinking days. You know, I would knock on people's doors and I would hear, shh, be quiet, she's out there, where she leads. I don't have that anymore. My relationships with people and with my higher power are very good. Are very good. And that's what's important, because one of the things that we tend not to realize while we're living, there's a lot of things we don't realize, we're building a legacy. What are people going to say when we're gone? How are they going to view us in our lives? Will they view us as being helpful? Will they view us that way? If I never have sex again and I never have a partner, I don't give a shit. I have love everywhere I go in my life because I've been sober since Lincoln was the tot. You know, I've been that lucky. It shouldn't have happened at all. It shouldn't happen at all for any of us. It's a fucking miracle that anybody ever gets any more than 24 hours, you know? And as far as I can see myself and other people in the program, we're heroes. Absolutely. I mean, to hell with the quest for the Holy Grail, that ain't shit. You know, we are on a spiritual journey that is difficult and dangerous, and part of what's dangerous is sex. The one thing I know is there's an AA headline, man follows dick over cliff, you know? And it's the same for women. You know, it's no different. It seems to all of us we meet the perfect package when we get sober. Absolutely. You know, and we tell everybody to practice their sex, and this is how the bad guys get in. And then we have to decide whether we're going to stay sober or not if our dream person walks out the door. My answer so far for the last 37 years has been, I'm staying here. It's the only noble thing I've ever done in my life, because the nobility of any cause is in the struggle. Absolutely. And we do struggle. It is a difficult, difficult thing we do, and it's so worthwhile. Every day that we don't use, we make it a better world. Absolutely. To say nothing of what we're not costing the city and county where we reside. We're expensive tarts. So sex, I'm all for it. It's a good thing, depending on how you work it. You know, Mother Teresa said, God doesn't give us the toy and tell us not to play with it. God doesn't do that. I believe that. I believe that sex, our sex powers are God-given and therefore good, neither to be used lightly or selfishly, nor to be despised and loathed. The first time I read that, bells went off in my head. It was the first sane statement I had ever heard anybody say about sex. Because everything I got until then, as I said before, which makes no sense whatsoever, spiritual wisdom does not make sense. It is not logical, nor is it linear, but it works. It's against everything we've ever been taught, even in church. Spiritual wisdom works, and that's all I need to know. And it usually has something to do with being helpful to others. And is it time for me to wrap this up? Is it time for me to wrap this up?
You got a few more minutes.
All right. Well, all I can say, oh, my dear, it's you. How fabulous. How absolutely fabulous to see your face. It's been too, too long. Yeah, it is good. The fellowship has saved my life. My experience is that we give one another life, literally. Our life is made up of time. The time we spend with one another is bits and pieces of our lives. We give each other life. It is a noble thing to do. Absolutely. And I know one thing. If I don't drink today, I'm not going to use any drugs today, any other drugs today. If I don't use that, then back to wherever your shit comes from, because if I drank, I did everything. And if he doesn't get his money, he can't buy guns and ship them to terrorists all over the world. You want to support world peace, keep your happy ass in a chair at an AA meeting. Because if you don't drink, you won't do anything else. That's important. We really do make it a better world every day that we don't drink. It's not bullshit. It's true. We'd never get to see where it goes out when it goes out on the waters, but that doesn't mean that the things that happen in our little home groups don't go out on the waters and affect the world. Just because we don't get to see it doesn't mean it isn't real. And with that, I think I better shut up. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Billy.